You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to have you with us for this episode. The Warriors played their first game of 2017 tonight. They beat the Denver Nuggets 127-119, a game that was fairly nip and tuck throughout. And I wanted to talk to a friend of mine who knows the Nuggets really well, Adam Mares, who is the runs Denver Stiffs, which is a great Nuggets blog, and get his perspective. If you remember, I actually talked to him preseason about that Nuggets Warriors game that was not on television, and I enjoy talking to Adam a lot. Conversation runs about half an hour, and then after that, because I didn't really have a place to fit it in the podcast, I will include the audio of I asked Coach Kerr about Draymond Green's triple-double, and so I'll include that after the interview, so you can listen for that then if you're looking forward to that. So conversation runs a little bit over 30 minutes. Hope you like it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm a little bit excited to talk to you about this because it was a weird game in person, and I was wondering if it came across the same way on television.
I thought it was a fun game on television.
Yeah, was that too?
Obviously, yeah, two really good offenses. Denver's not a very good defense, but it was nice to see them kind of score against the Warriors' defense. But you knew going into it they had absolutely no chance of stopping Golden State on offense. So the game went probably as good as, for Denver at least, as well as I think it could have.
Yeah, that's fair. They ended up 9 of 35 from 3. If they had made a few more of those, it certainly could have been a close game. Something our mutual friend Nate Duncan brought up during the fourth quarter was that they had a few shots go in and out. And I think in many ways that's just kind of the way that these sort of regular season games go for the Warriors, is that they played fine. Like, this was not one of those games where they just played badly and survived. Like, they played reasonably well because the Nuggets played reasonably well, but they still had enough to win.
And I think if Denver would have made a few more open three-pointers in the second and third quarter, then the Warriors would have stepped on the gas more in the fourth. As it was, the Nuggets were down like 12 or something in the final 2.5 minutes and then kind of got hot. And if they were going to win this game, that was the way to do it. Kind of lull Golden State into thinking, you know, that false sense of security and then get really hot at the end. But no, I thought it was a fun game. What made you think it was weird? What was weird about it?
Well, the whole thing, like, so Jokic, let's say, for example, so he played, I think it was the first 8 minutes, and then he picked up a second foul. They brought in Nurkic, and then Jokic didn't play, basically. He picked it up a little bit at the end of the first half. The Warriors were just kind of discombobulated a little bit throughout, defensively a little bit. Just like one of those games where it wasn't that they sleptwalked through it, because they do that sometimes. Like, the Warriors are certainly a team that has that propensity, but there was just some awkwardness, like Andre Iguodala passing up layups and all that sort of stuff. So we'll see how all that works out. But this wasn't, you know, like, as I said, it wasn't like the Mavericks game, kind of either Mavericks home game at Oracle, where they just kind of cruised. Like, I don't think that was really what this was. But a question I wanted to ask you was there a Warrior that you thought, like, played the best of any of the guys on their team?
Man, I'd have to really think about it. It wasn't Clay. I don't think it was Draymond. I don't think it was Curry. I guess you would probably say Kevin Durant was the one that stood out and just had some big plays. But no, I wouldn't really say anybody really stood out, head and shoulders above anybody else. Did you think so?
Not really. Draymond had some nice plays, but it was also his 13 assists really snuck up on me, because I think usually this was something actually Durant brought up a little bit post game. He picks up a lot of secondary or hockey assists. It just depends on how defenses are doing it. And this game, a lot of those just ended up as normal assists. So it's not that big a difference, but it's still interesting. But his offensive contribution, you know, kind of outside of that, was a little bit muted. Like, he had some nice plays, but wasn't doing that. For stretches of it, Curry was the best. Like, he had a few little moments where he looked more like 2015-16 Curry, but then he also had some bad passes and had some moments where he wasn't as much in the game. I don't think it was Clay. I thought his defense was all right, but not great. So yeah, maybe you fall back on Durant, who has been, I would say, in some ways, underratedly good this year, just because it's not as obvious, because he doesn't have those crazy scoring nights. It's mostly about efficiency rather than volume.
Right.
But he's been good. But again, his defense wasn't great in this game. It was fine, but it wasn't great. So I'd say they were all about the same. And then the bench players, you know, I thought Livingston and Clark both had some nice stretches, but nobody else was really just spectacular out there. And I was actually more impressed at moments with more of the Denver guys. Like, I thought Jokic played well. I thought for stretches, like in that second half, Wilson Chandler's just making a ton of shots. Nurkic is one of the best games I've seen him play. So maybe it's just the novelty effect of that, that the Warriors doing this kind of a game is not that interesting, but the Nuggets, you only get to see them a couple times a year.
One of Jokic's best skills, one of his best attributes, I actually wrote about this for Vice 2 weeks ago, is that he's really good at these like 7-foot shots. And he caught Durant with a couple of them today because Durant went to block the shot thinking he was going to take it to the rim, but he doesn't. He just settles for that 7-footer because he's so good at him. And very few big guys will take that. Very few players will take a 7-footer or 5-footer. They'll just try to go right hard at the rim. And I thought he caught Durant on a couple of those. So maybe that was a little bit of why, you know, maybe defensively he didn't look great tonight. But when I'm watching the game and thinking of it from a Nuggets perspective, Durant and Draymond were the two players I was probably most thinking, like, if this game comes down to the wire, they can't stop those two guys. And Curry, obviously, they can't stop him either. But Durant and Draymond, I thought, could get the easiest looks they would want, no matter what they did.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I was a little bit surprised at how many open looks Jamal Murray missed. It wasn't a big story in the game. He played less than 20 minutes, but he's such a good shooter, and he's been making them for the most part. You can, of course, correct me if I'm wrong. And so things like that were a few of the little bullets they dodged. But as you said, you know, the Nuggets weren't going to stop the Warriors. This was going to be an efficient campaign for them, and it certainly was. Could look at it a lot of different ways, but I mean, just shooting almost 53% from the field, 50 of 95, is legitimately impressive.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Denver especially is really, really bad at guarding the perimeter. I think that this is 2 years in a row now. And it's kind of funny because we've talked about this, I think, on our last podcast about how Michael Malone's teams tend to over-rotate and protect the paint. And this is kind of just a cool basketball anecdote. But early in the year, the Nuggets changed their pick-and-roll coverage. And they were basically conceding mid-range jumpers by playing the pick-and-roll two-on-two and not helping off anybody. And they were giving up points in the paint, and they were giving up mid-range jumpers, but their defense overall was pretty average, not that bad. Well, Malone hated it, and I asked him about it. I said, how do you feel your pick-and-roll coverage doing? He was so mad that they were giving up paint points that they changed everything, and now teams just light them up from behind the three-point arc. I mean, everybody, and especially, obviously, the Warriors. And I really don't get what his thinking is. I prodded him on it a lot. And I think he just hates giving up points in the paint so much that he's almost blinded to the fact that they leave shooters open just way too often.
That was a big story of this game, actually, because there were a couple of moments. You pointed one out on Twitter where Jamal Murray went to help out on a David West play at the elbow and then just left Klay Thompson open from three. The Warriors have three of the best shooters in the league, and I made the point on Twitter, maybe three of the best shooters of all time on right. The same team, and you can't execute that sort of philosophy against them, because not only are those guys really good shooters, but at least two of the three, and some would argue three of the three, are tall for their position. Yeah. So you can't get there late. Getting there late on Klay Thompson doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot.
And those are defensive principles, though. I just refuse to believe that's Murray making a bad call, although, right. I mean, but I think it's just the Nuggets do it so much that you think, what do you think? And David West's a good passer. He's a smart guy. I think he knew all along, you know, kind of go up slow. He only took four shots. He's looking to pass. And, yeah, he just suckered him into coming and helping the elbow. Wide open shot for Klay. If you ask me, people always say Denver's defense is this new lineup they have is awesome offense and a terrible defense. I don't think it's a terrible defense. I don't think it should be a terrible defense. I think they can be league average, which is pretty good considering they've got three guys starting that are under 22. But I think they just do stupid things and have stupid principles, like trying to protect the paint at all costs, which this is 2017. You know, it's time to move on from that philosophy.
The template could even be something more like what Portland did last year, where they were really good on offense and just, I think they were somewhere in the 15 to 20 range on defense, and that was enough right. to be competitive. And I agree with you that they could be league average. It might also take some time and experience. The worry there, though, is that Chandler and Gallo are going to get older and they'll probably get a little bit worse defensively. But right. that's also why Denver has other assets. You know, they can figure this out and make it work. But I was also impressed, just they went to a little bit of a shorter bench. Denver only played 9 guys. The Warriors only played 10. And other than Jameer, who I just don't really feel super comfortable playing more. Also, I resent that he plays more when, you know, I love to see Jamal Murray have the ball in his hands more frequently.
Right. But
Denver does a good job with the guys they put out there. And that's part of the reason why, even though this is a Warriors podcast, I was spending part of it thinking about, well, what would happen if these two teams played in a 7-game series? And my feeling was,
yes.
It would be a really fun 4 or 5-game series.
I think it'd be four. I mean, I don't know if that Denver can beat the Warriors. Here's the interesting thing. I guess I'll contradict myself as immediately after saying that is the Nuggets. I like that they're going to this one center at a time lineup. I think it's smart that they're playing Nikola Jokic. They want to play him more minutes. He only did 25 tonight, but a lot of that was because of early foul trouble. I like the rotation that they had tonight, but this is a team. The one place the Nuggets can really punish the Warriors is on the offensive glass. You know, Jokic had 8 tonight. Nurkic actually didn't have any, but usually he has 3 or 4. And I don't think the Nuggets can beat them, but I think they can really frustrate them by just overwhelming them on the glass. And then you add Kenneth Faried as another guy that, you know, didn't play tonight that can pound the offensive glass. So at least it makes for a little bit of an interesting style fight. And then I think that series would be fun just because people don't realize this because the Nuggets just changed their starting lineup. But over the last 10 games, the Nuggets are a top 5 offense. And I don't think that's a coincidence. If you look tonight, 8 guys on the Nuggets roster had 3 or more assists. The ball's just popping with this team right now. Playing through Jokic, I think, gets everybody involved and everybody, you know, they say passing's contagious. I think the Nuggets are just in a really nice place right now where everybody's passing and cutting and moving, and their offense is really good. But so I think they can make it an interesting 4-game series, but I just don't think they have enough.
I did at the beginning of every month, I do a podcast on schedule analysis, and then I do 4 factors, which of course you're more familiar with even than I am. And the Warriors' defensive rebounding is still a big problem. And it's one of the bigger changes, more so than the center changeover in terms of offensive rebounding, is on the defensive glass. There was a sequence in this game where JaVale McGee just couldn't get a hand on the ball because Jokic had it. The Nuggets ended up not scoring on that sequence because the ball ended up going out of bounds, something like that. And then, but that is a problem. The calculus for the Warriors, and I support this as a theoretical measure, is that they're so good offensively, like with the death lineup. The death lineup, Draymond, that specific Draymond at center lineup, only gets like 71% of available rebounds, which is insanely low. Right. But they just score so much that it doesn't really matter.
Right.
But there are teams that can exploit that, and that's the challenge for facing them. And I thought Denver didn't really have to deal with this in this game. But the challenge is, can you keep your bigs on the floor defensively? Because if you can, you could really make it work. And that's what Cleveland did in the finals. Tristan Thompson was, they could keep him on the floor because Curry, maybe it was because he was limited. Maybe it's because he still isn't attacking switches the way that he did before that. He isn't that guy. But that is something that against good teams, against bad teams, against teams like Denver that are in the middle, they're going to have to figure out.
Obviously, this is the Nuggets Warriors, you know, post game podcast. But I gotta say, I really like Cleveland's this year against Golden State. You mentioned, you know, the game they played on Christmas, I thought was really entertaining. I don't think it's anything like the playoff series is going to go. Cleveland's just so good at slowing things down, and the more you could slow things down, the more that offensive glass becomes an issue. And I just think Cleveland is so set up so perfectly to attack this Golden State team that I don't think it's going to be a runaway by any means. I don't know what the feel is with Warriors fans because of how dominant this team has been in the regular season and offensively this year. But I just like the Cleveland matchup for all the reasons you talked about, exploiting the glass, but especially their ability to slow the game down and make it a half-court game.
I agree with you on principle, but I think there's a more fundamental note. And if it's a Warriors podcast, we can talk about Warriors Cavs, we can talk about whatever we want. But The thing that is resonating with me, and the Christmas game was a good example of it, there have been a couple others recently, is that the Warriors are continuing one really frustrating Kerr hallmark, which has been that they do what they do regardless of the situation.
Right.
So like their system is predicated on ball movement and player movement. And what Cleveland did in the finals last year, beyond getting some other structural advantages, Curry not being 100%, Draymond getting suspended, all that kind of stuff, is that Cleveland used that against the Warriors. So they bogged them down and they just didn't go to bread and butter. They didn't go to anything else. And Cleveland, on the other hand, did exactly the opposite when they faced Toronto, where they had this play where basically it was a pick and roll base, but then they had a lob option on the far side. They ran it until Toronto stopped it, and it took it was like 8 or 9 possessions, something like that. The Warriors, and this is a coaching decision, this is not a player decision, have not shown that kind of ruthlessness. The idea of we can do really basic stuff and you can't stop it. It's not our offense. It's not what we do. And there have been some really kind of cursory indications that they'll move away from that a little bit, because their crunch time offense has actually been pretty shaky recently because when they face opponent that can do that. And just doing a Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant pick and roll is enough to screw up almost any defense. And they're just not, they're basically not using that arrow for whatever reason. And it's not a problem 90% of the time because they're so much better than all the teams they're facing. But that other 90% is irrelevant to what we're talking about because odds are you're not going to be facing one of those teams in the finals.
Right. I mean, really, this year does just come as, just like it was last year. It comes down to those two teams. And here's an interesting stat for you and for Warriors fans. After following a defensive rebound, so basically following an opponent missed shot, the Warriors come down and score 1.2 points per possession, or 120 point offensive rating, right? Following a made shot, that number is at 1.07. So after a defensive rebound, and every team's better after a defensive rebound, the Warriors are second following a defensive rebound. They're sixth following a made shot, which basically means, and this isn't a perfect science, but it basically means they're not as dominant when you make it a half-court game. And by the way, one team that is ahead of them in offensive efficiency following a made shot is Cleveland. They're number two. So I just think if the, I know we're getting ahead of ourselves talking about a finals in January, but just if they can get make it a half court game, I think the two teams are much more similar in talent than if they play an up and down game. And I think a finals will just be a half court game.
One encouraging sign for the Warriors in that sense is that their half court defense has just been better than Cleveland's. So the hope would be that they can do that. But at the same point, you know, that's the nature of the variability. You know, you have to actually get those stops to make that happen. Cleveland is a great team. And tonight was a good example of, you know, the Nuggets aren't the greatest fast breaking team in the world. They only had 13 in this game. And the Warriors gave up a fair amount of clean looks. They had some nice defensive possessions too. And they're going to have to tighten up a lot. They won't need it at all in the regular season. I think they can get the one seed, not comfortably, but pretty cleanly without playing their best basketball. But the other big thing that tonight's game made me think about from the Warriors' perspective is, while we thought at the beginning of the year that the Warriors, you know, that they are much better than the rest of the West from a talent perspective. I mean, to me, at full strength versus full strength, like, it's also specific matchups. Like, I just don't think the Clippers and Spurs match up super well against them. But what we've seen is that the next group in the West is better. And so the logic it was, they'll face a threat in the Western Conference Finals, and then they'll obviously face a threat assuming they make the finals. Right. I was thinking tonight about how the first round series is probably going to be okay, but that second round series is probably going to be tough.
And Utah, it could be Utah, could be, I mean, San Antonio, Houston, Clippers, any of those teams are tough.
Sure, and it also adds to the cumulative fatigue. So maybe they're not as much of a threat to lose a series to the Rockets or to lose a series to the Clippers or whatever. They certainly could. Like, I'm not saying it's, you know, a 100% chance or anything like that, but I had said before the season that I thought there was a chance, like a meaningful chance, that the Warriors would lose less than five games or less in the playoffs. I don't feel comfortable in that anymore because those teams got stronger, and we haven't seen that Warriors. And I mean, at the same point, you know, the Warriors are on pace to win, I think, 68 games, and they haven't played their best ball yet for more than a few quarters this season. So you do have those things that are running together, but
the flip side of that, though, Danny, is that, you know, iron sharpens iron, and I do think sometimes these teams get pushed early on in a playoff series, and it brings out the best in them, kind of gets them in a groove. And so,
I mean, the Oklahoma City series is a great example of that for the Warriors. I mean, they played pretty badly at the beginning of that series and turned it on. And yeah, they had some games where Oklahoma City helped them out, but it's the same logic.
Yeah, and so I think you're right. I think it's kind of, it cuts both ways, that they definitely will be more fatigued. But if they can come out of it without injuries, which is always the biggest variable, you know, they might be peaking just thanks to being pushed. So it'll be interesting to see. Let me ask you a quick question, though, because talk about the game tonight. One observation I had, and I've actually had from watching the Warriors this year, is that Steph Curry seems to get fewer opportunities to really ride his hot hand. Last year, it seemed like he would make two threes in a row, and then it was the Steph Curry show until he missed. And it was just kind of like he would come down and do things, and sometimes he would make an assist rather than shoot because teams would triple-team him. But it just seems like that happens a lot less now. And it's not like he got hot, I think, in two separate times tonight, once in the first half and once in the second half. But it just seems like those end inorganically rather than him like missing or having a turnover after like six straight points or six straight made buckets. It just seems like those opportunities come fewer. Is that something that's happening, or is that not something you're noticing?
I'm noticing that too. And there are a couple different ideas that I've had with it. One is, and this is kind of an overarching thing, is that he hasn't been as good off the dribble this year. And also, but that's one point. Like off the dribble, I'm at some point, people ask me about this enough, I'm probably going to do like a podcast about it, about the differences with that so far. And it's eye test. It's also numbers. Like there is a difference there.
Okay.
But the bigger part in some ways to me is a structural change that is a part of adding Kevin Durant. And so there are a million differences between Barnes and Durant. But one of the biggest is that now the Warriors are playing, especially also with Klay's development in this way, they're playing a higher proportion of guys that are comfortable with a grab and go. And how that affects Curry is that there are fewer possessions that cross the timeline with the ball in his hands.
Right.
And when Curry's feeling it, he just takes that shot. Or if he freaks the other team out enough that they press on him like he's going to take that shot and do it.
Right.
If that possession starts in Draymond's hands, you know, he'll feed Curry well enough, but it's a fundamentally different thing than if the ball is in his hands to start with. And so not only is Draymond comfortable with that, Iguodala, of course, Kevin Durant. So you have all these guys, and it just gives you a larger variability in starting point. And when the starting point is an important element of those situations, it adds more variability to it.
I think that's a really great point about the grab and go stuff, because I definitely think that plays into it. And you mentioned Draymond. He was the best at hunting for Curry after Curry had gotten hot. Like he's part of what makes him so great is he's so good at dribble handoffs, and he's so good at the dribble handoffs with Curry. Like when the defender guarding Curry knows that's what's coming, and he still kind of tricks him into getting Curry open on those. So
there were a couple of those tonight. I actually got really mad late in the game because when they went to Draymond at center a couple different times and had Jokic on him, they would run either a handoff or a pick and roll. Sometimes that can get complicated in terms of differentiating, and Jokic just wouldn't get out all the way. And they were running fair enough offense the rest of the time, but I'm just like, do that until they stop it. Like, Jokic hasn't shown an ability to hedge or whatever you want to do in that spot.
Dennis would not stop it.
No. And so you're just sitting there going, okay, you have one of the best shooters in the league. I mean, one of the best shooter of all time. And the other team is basically incapable of defending an open three. Just keep doing it. And I think that ties in with what we were talking about before, about the kind of the fourth quarter thing and the issue of just doing what they do, is that when they don't need that kind of ruthlessness to win the game, they don't use it. And then they don't have that in muscle memory of the idea of, it is a little bit boring for Klay and for the other guys to just run a Curry, Draymond pick and roll every single time down. But guess what? Winning is still really, really fun.
Right. Right. And I think that's why the Nuggets have played the Warriors kind of close over the last 2 years, even in the preseason when both teams played their starters for three quarters. I think Denver was kind of pounding them. I think when you get to a playoff game, what does Denver do that Golden State can't stop? Probably nothing. What does the Warriors do that the Nuggets can't stop? Well, certainly putting Nikola Jokic into the pick and roll is one thing. And if they ever played a playoff series, I think the Warriors would just hammer that home and almost render Jokic unplayable. And he's one of my favorite players. I love him, but he has weaknesses on the defensive end, and that's certainly one of them.
Since you're somebody who follows the league, and because we already were looking forward, I was wondering just off the cuff for you, what teams in the West, so we'll take out Cleveland, what teams in the West do you think would give the Warriors the most trouble knowing what we know now in a 7-game series?
Man, that is a tough one. Not the Clippers. I actually don't think the Clippers are competition for them. In fact, I think the best thing that can happen for the Warriors is to play the Clippers, because I think that's such a contentious series, and the Warriors clearly have such an upper hand, it would really get them going. I guess you have to kind of say, I don't believe in Houston as a playoff series, but I really like James Harden. He's historically, he struggled against Klay Thompson, though. Isn't that right?
He has, and against the overall team, because they played the Rockets the last 2 years. And what happened both times is that the first couple games, maybe they won, maybe they lost, but they had the Warriors had a little bit of trouble with Harden, and then they figured it out a couple games in, and then he struggled. Like, there was that game, I think it was in the 2015 playoffs, where he had, I think it was 11 turnovers in the decisive game.
Yeah.
So he had a couple nice performances early in that series. Granted, this is a very different Rockets team,
right.
But I'll lead you into it. For me, the two teams are the Spurs and the Jazz in either order.
That's exactly where I was going to go. Yep.
And the reason for it is that they have kind of different types of personnel. And the Jazz, of course, haven't proven anything in the playoffs yet. I mean, they haven't done that. But they have a lot of the types of guys that give the Warriors issues. So George Hill it feels like his life has been preparing for that series. Like with the idea of him being such a good on-ball defender, the balance of on and off ball for him offensively. And Hood and Hayward, if they both can actually physically play on the court, are a nice set of ball of shot creation, and they challenge the Warriors in that way. And Rudy's had some really nice games against the Warriors over time. And also they have a lot of different depth pieces, so they can actually go on some runs depending on how Kerr wants to manage lineups in the playoffs. And the Spurs are just really good. I mean, Kawhi's a monster, single best guy to guard Kevin Durant in the league. I don't think there's much of an argument about that. And their pick and roll stuff is bad. You know, like if they're going to start Tony Parker and Pau Gasol, then the 1-5 pick and roll is devastating. You know who doesn't run a lot of 1-5 pick and roll? The Golden State Warriors.
Right. Yeah, that's the one they don't. Yeah, it is interesting. I'd probably reverse it though. Still, I like the Spurs. They'll give them a test. But I think that Utah team, I think, might be. They're in the conversation for most underrated team. They always have so many injuries, and maybe that's no longer a fluke. Maybe that's just who they are. But that team, I think, has so many pieces and so many talented players that they have, and then obviously Rudy Gobert, who can just patrol the rim as well as anybody. I think that might actually be my favorite series or my toughest challenge for the Warriors. So the nice thing is that there's a good chance they won't even play each other, but. At least a nice thing for the Warriors, but I think I would go with Utah.
So one absolutely insane stat for this year is just how little time their best players have played together. And so the Favors, Gobert, Hill, Hood, Hayward combination, their best five, has played a total of 27 minutes this year.
That's crazy.
Three games, and we just don't know what they are. You know, it's a weird thing because, like, people like you and I and some of our kind of, let's call them our basketball friends, have been on the Jazz for, it feels like, a lifetime now.
Yeah.
And we still don't have the evidence. So we're just, like, looking at these basic indications, being like, this is going to be really good. And I firmly believe that we're right. But I understand why there hasn't been that connection to it. But I agree with you. Like, that would be a great series, and they're deep. But they're so dependent on George Hill now, also because of the lack of their other options. I mean, Shelvin Mack and Exum are fine.
Right.
They need that. But at the same point, the Jazz get scarier to the Warriors also, the more clear their spot in the playoffs whatsoever is. Because then you can start to say, oh, well, it doesn't matter if George Hill plays in the last 10 games as long as he's ready for the playoffs. And that's when it gets interesting, because if I were Utah, knowing what we know right now, if you assume the Warriors get the one seed and the Spurs get the two, if the goal is to make it a long way, I don't think there's much of a difference between the 3, 4, 5, and 6. I'd rather finish 6th than 4 or 5.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. I if I'm going to stay, I'm not really afraid of anybody except for maybe Cleveland, but Utah is definitely a team I'd want to avoid. That'd be such an interesting series. And then I also think Quinn Snyder, I'd love to see him in the playoff series scheming for the Warriors. I'd just be really curious to see what kind of things they try out.
One thing I wanted to ask you a little bit about, again, not a Nuggets podcast, but I love talking about the Nuggets. They're one of my teams. Is it disappointing to you, or is it just age that Moutier hasn't been as good defensively as I think at least I thought, but I think many expected him to be?
I had a fascinating conversation with Michael Malone this week, or last week, I guess it was. And I asked him, because the Nuggets can't contain dribble penetration, they can't contain pick and rolls, and it all starts with Moutier in particular, but Jameer Nelson, Jamal Murray, all those guys struggle with it. And Malone's answer was, well, we really haven't had any time to work on individual footwork on defense, and that's what Moutier needs more than anything. So like basically saying he has the physical tools, but he just doesn't know the right footwork. And I thought it was weird that they hadn't worked on that together. But yes, he should be a better defender. He is maybe the worst in the NBA at fighting through screens. And he's 6'5", strong, relatively athletic. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense that he's that slow. I think he's not in very good shape for the second year. I don't think he's in, you know, the type of shape he needs to be in to play the minutes he's playing. And then, you know, his footwork, there's reasons guys dribble around him so effortlessly. The Nuggets keep giving up points in the paint to guards. It's kind of a trending stat, and that just kind of shows you that they're getting past the first line of defense so easily. So I would say yes, but at the same time, I want to see what happens when he actually spends a summer working on his footwork. Last summer, he went to Dallas, spent the entire summer in his home in Dallas. I really hope he spends a summer in Denver this year working with the coaching staff on some of these individual things that he needs to work on.
Yeah, that's a good point. Any other takeaways from what you saw from this game? I thought Ian Clark had a really nice second quarter, but then didn't really do much with it. But it's good to see him have some nice stretches. And then Livingston and West were both fine off the bench.
Clark is your perfect eighth or ninth man. I mean, you don't really need a whole lot from him other than to kind of, you know, hold the gate while he's in there. And he did more. He went well above and beyond while he was in there. So I thought he was great. It was nice to see. It's Denver has this very little brother complex that nobody ever watches them or talks about them, and I'm guilty of it too. But it was nice to see Nikola Jokic kind of get the primetime slot, even though it was on League Pass. It was one of only two games on the West Coast tonight, and it was kind of nice to get to see him play and play at least somewhat well. I thought defensively he was terrible, but it was nice for him to get to show some of the passing and ball handling that that makes him such an interesting player.
I'm very excited for him to get a little bit more gestation time before his close-up, because you and I both love watching him. He's a phenomenal offensive talent, and right. I think it's only going to get better with time and better surrounding players. So I don't know what the Nuggets are going to be a year or two from now, but I'm very excited about it, and we'll see. And there's an outside chance that we see this as a playoff series, as we said before. I'd be excited to see it.
It'd be great for Denver, for sure.
Yeah. Anything else on this, or I think we're about ready to go?
That's it. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, thanks a bunch. Thanks again to Adam for taking the time. You can read him at Denver Stiffs, his Nuggets blog, and you can also read him advice. He has some stuff there and various other places. Very talented writer. I really enjoy talking with him as well. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter at @Adam_Mares. That's @Adam_Mares. The Warriors will play again on Wednesday. We'll, of course, have a podcast on that. That's the game against the Blazers, and then a big game on Friday against the Grizzlies. We'll probably have something on that too, just given my schedule. Hoping to have something cool for tomorrow. Still not locked in yet, so you'll hear about it if it happens, and you won't hear about it if it doesn't, I guess. And if you want to support the show, lots of different ways you can do it. You can leave a rating, leave a review, tell your friends, and also, of course, subscribe and download every episode, whatever you want to do. Really do appreciate it. And also, you can send feedback, good, bad, indifferent, to DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com or Twitter @DannyLarue. I will work on incorporating some of those thoughts in all of this. I know people have asked me stuff about Curry off the dribble and all that. So that is something I'm going to look into. If my other plan for tomorrow falls through, that might actually be something that comes in on the podcast that will come out on Wednesday morning. We will see if and when that comes to pass. And as promised, I'm going to end this with my question and Coach Kerr's answer on the significance of triple-doubles and Draymond's tonight in particular. Draymond got a triple-double tonight. I think it was the second of the season. Do you think triple-doubles in general are a little bit overhyped by the media as a stat this year, or is it something that's a good reflection of a player's all-around contribution?
No, it's a great reflection of a player's all-around game. And he was only 5 turnovers from a couple, which would have been really impressive. I'm really glad Draymond got the triple-double because he's come close so many games this year, and then we haven't played him in the fourth quarter. You know, there's so many guys around the league who are putting up triple doubles, and everyone, you know, talks about it. And if Draymond, if he played more, you know, he'd get plenty of them as well. But we've had plenty of games where he hasn't played much in the fourth quarter, and he's been close. So I'm happy for him because I know he takes pride in that, and he hasn't made an issue of it all year. He's not chasing anything, so it's great to see him come up with that tonight.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year.
Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.